Saleh, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, July 6th. On this day in 1775, the Continental Congress issues its Declaration on the Causes and Necessity of Taking Up Arms Against England due to the long train of grievances held against King George III, roughly 1 year before an official Declaration of Independence would be approved in Philadelphia, making the split official, changing the world forever. In 1862, Samuel Langhorne Clemens pens his first article reporting on the bustling mining business in Nevada for the Virginia City Territorial Enterprise. He'd accompanied his brother to the region, hoping to become rich panning for gold or silver, but was given a job for the local newspaper, where his true talents emerged. Taking the pen name Mark Twain, due to his experience as a riverboat pilot on the Mississippi, he later started writing about his experiences out west and his wide travels, becoming one of the most popular novelists in America. And in 1957, Althea Gibson becomes the first African-American to win a title at London's All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club, otherwise known as Wimbledon. In an era when black tennis players were quite rare, Gibson rose to the top of her game, setting the stage for other excellent black athletes to succeed, including Arthur Ashe, who had become a tennis star dominating the courts in the 1970s. When most people consider steel, they think about the stainless steel knives and forks in their collection of utensils. Steel is produced from iron ore in a process that changes its strength and tensile characteristics. Pennsylvania was an early leader in the iron industry, and the Commonwealth was the only one of the original 13 colonies that had the major building blocks, iron ore, coal, crude oil, and timber, in abundance to fuel the Industrial Revolution. The iron industry in Pennsylvania goes back over three centuries to the early 1700s, with iron deposits being discovered in the French Creek Valley in Chester County outside Philadelphia. As a former petroleum geologist, I am quite familiar with the iron and steel industry and have done mineral collecting all across the country, gathering samples of magnetite, hematite, and other iron minerals. The National Iron and Steel Museum in Coatesville highlights the long heritage of iron and steel in America, with exhibits on shipbuilding, the Transcontinental Railroad, and other industries crucial to building the infrastructure of our nation. Although Pennsylvania played an important early role in the development of iron, major deposits were later discovered at the Mesabi Range and other regions around the country. Jim Ziegler is the executive director of the National Iron and Steel Museum. Gene DiOrio is their historian. We have them both with us here today to talk about the museum and the rich heritage of the iron industry. Jim and Gene, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is going to be to both of you, so you can answer in whatever order you like. How long have you both been there at the National Iron and Steel Museum?
Well, as the relative newcomer, 7 years, I'll start that. Started with the board, and then as our operations expanded, it was recognized that the day-to-day operations manager was needed, so I assumed that role. Gene, you can tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, I began with some others in 1984 on a very, very small way with the idea of putting together a museum of Coatesville history. That was the founding of it, and we incorporated in 1984. But it has grown from a small museum to historic houses, and now we're really focusing on the industry as a whole. And I relinquished being founder and chairman and director a lot of years ago. Jim is now our director. Scott Houston is now the president. We have really grown quite a lot. But yes, I've been involved humbly at first until now for 30-some years.
Oh, very interesting. What is the actual mission of the museum?
Well, our mission, the parent organization is the Greystone Society. That is the 501c3. It's a not-for-profit, non-profit educational institution. We're focused on the broadening of an understanding of the iron and steel history of Coatesville and Chester County and the region and the nation beyond. And we do this to a variety of audiences of ages and interests. We collect, preserve, exhibit, and we interpret the iron and steel history in a meaningful way to those who come and visit.
Many people know that Pennsylvania is an important state in natural resources. They don't really know much about our history providing those resources. Just any thoughts about the history of the iron and steel industry and how important Pennsylvania was?
Well, no question about it, Gene. Pennsylvania was a leader. And while, yes, some of the other colonies did have iron industries and so forth, Pennsylvania was blessed with the natural resources. And that's a key element as to why you got started. In doing tours here, I've been asked many times, how come Lukens or the earlier plant here came? And it came here because of two or three things. First of all, there were iron ore deposits, not in Coatesville, but in northern Chester County and in neighboring Berks County. And then we had the Brandywine, the west branch of the Brandywine, which provided the power. And so you had all of this, and then the forests, which for places like Hopewell, which were burned to create coke for the production. So you had the natural resources close by. And in a time when transportation was difficult, certainly it was a major factor as to why the iron business got started here in Coatesville.
Now, Coatesville is not a well-known name around the country, but I want to mention that Rebecca Lukens was the first female CEO of a major American corporation. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And, of course, Rebecca's our heroine. The history, of course, is that her husband, Dr. Charles Lukens, who was instrumental in getting the company on its specialty iron and steel project line, he had died. And Rebecca, in 1825, took over the business and ran it for a number of years. And yes, at a time when women were not involved in businesses, it was spectacular. Remember, women couldn't even vote in that period.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she made a great success of it, and her legacy of holding on and persevering and intelligence has certainly continued to the present day.
Not many people know that iron ore, which has turned into steel, has been mined here for over three centuries. Why was it so important to get started here with the mining industry? I mean, obviously, Pennsylvania, one of the original 13 colonies. Just tell us a little bit about the scope of the history of mining here in Pennsylvania.
Well, as I said, in the early days, when plants were small, local deposits of iron ore, such as we had here in northern Chester County and Berks County, were practical. But as the business expanded, most of those were not large enough to support major steel industries. For example, the Scranton Works, I think the iron ore started to run out, and the plant moved to New York. But the discovery of the Mesabi Basin changed a lot of things. Here you had a huge deposit of iron ore of very top quality, and it wasn't down deep. It was easily extracted practically from the surface.
Yes.
So the Mesabi Range is a major factor in that, and of course a major reason why there were so many steel plants in Illinois and along the Great Lakes region. Lukens in the early 1900s purchased a firm in Virginia, Allegheny Ore and Iron Company, with the thought that if needed, we would have a supply of iron ore. And there was ore there, but from what I've learned from others in the company, it was, it had to be extracted at deep level. And when we needed ore, it was available in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Lukens did not have a blast furnace, so we weren't doing the basic conversion here in Coatesville of iron ore to metal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you could underrate the importance of the Mesabi Range, because it supplied enormous amounts of ore to all the major steel companies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Mesabi Range out in Minnesota is one of the largest in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact,
mm-hmm.
I believe the mine itself is about 7 miles long. I mean, it's just, it's enormous.
Yeah, that's what I understand. I've never seen it, but yes. And it you know, with the Great Lakes, it was transported from Minnesota to Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, which is where a lot of plants located. For example, Bethlehem Steel had a huge plant at Burns Harbor in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's a key factor in the development of the American steel industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who are interested in steel and steel plants, I personally visited the U.S. steel plant in the Midwest. The plant itself is a mile long.
Yeah, where
was
that?
Which is kind of remarkable if you think about it.
Yeah.
But Pennsylvania was one of the major early states in production of natural resources, kind of got it all started. Without the resources available in Pennsylvania, the Industrial Revolution would have been much different in America. And just a real quick question, just in a snapshot, just tell us what the difference is between steel and stainless steel. I know, but our listeners probably don't.
Well, stainless steel involves the application of various alloys to carbon steel, such as Inconel and Monel and so forth. Yeah.
And I believe it's actually much more resistant to corrosion and weathering, et cetera. So,
oh, yes.
That's
absolutely
what makes it so attractive.
Absolutely.
We are just about to take a break. We are talking with Jim Ziegler and Gene DiOrio of the National Iron and Steel Museum in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, on living history. But we will be right back after a commercial break.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
WCHE 1520 AM. Local news at the top of each hour and updated whenever news breaks, including on our Facebook page and our website, WCHE1520.com.
This is Gene Pasale, and you are listening to Living History. We have Jim Ziegler, the Executive Director of the National Iron and Steel Museum outside Coatesville, Pennsylvania, and Gene DiOrio, their historian there on site. Gene and Jim, tell us just a little bit about the exhibits and the displays people can expect when they come to see the museum.
Well, we have the Lukens Natural Historic District is where we're located, right here in the heart of Coatesville. We're right next to an operating steel mill. It is the Coatesville plant of ArcelorMittal.
Formerly Lukens, correct?
Formerly Lukens.
Yeah.
Lukens became Bethlehem, and then ISG, and then Mittal, and then Arcelor and Mittal combined. So it's a plant of the world's largest steel conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
What visitors will see here with the backdrop of the steel mill is the homes of the Iron Masters, beginning with Rebecca Lukens, and then her family homes, Dr. Charles Houston and Abram Francis Houston, and then the office building that was the Lukens headquarters for many, many years. So that's where you start, and We have the processes and the people and the products that came from Coatesville on display here.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think from your website, I recall seeing a couple of images of the description of the meeting of the Transcontinental Railroad and the building of that. Obviously, still extremely important in the railroad industry. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have a rotating exhibit. So we had the Transcontinental Railroad. I guess that was this time last year. And the importance that that had to the country, and then the importance that Lucan Steel had to locomotive manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the shipbuilding exhibit, and that was also a notable. There are military, there are cargo ships, passenger ships, and submersibles, some of which were made here in Coatesville, the ones we displayed, and there were 60-some ships that we showed. All were made here in Coatesville. And then that is rotated out, and now we have the current exhibit, which is Coatesville Rolls into World War I. And that's an overview of what was happening on the front, what was happening in the nation, what was happening in Coatesville, and then what was happening in her steel plants. And that was Midvale Steel, which made munitions, and then Lucan's, which made ships.
Many people don't really think about the wide range of applications for steel, but it's truly enormous. I mean, you're talking about ships, motor vehicles, buildings, skyscrapers, just about everything that needs a very, very strong infrastructure uses steel, or at least has used steel in the past.
Absolutely.
Coatesville and Phoenixville, both important in the iron and steel industries. Obviously, the Phoenixville Iron Works, not too far away, also played a crucial role. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of both companies, both areas? I mean, obviously, Phoenixville, well-known in this area. They made the famous Phoenix columns and even the Phoenix guns. If you could just talk a little bit about that, that might be helpful.
Well, yes, Phoenix Steel got into structurals. David Reeves developed the Reeves column, which was sort of like an erector set, you might say. And Phoenix historically was famous for structurals, and yes, they provided railroad bridges all over the country. Lucan's focused on plates, and we were primarily from the beginning a roller of iron and steel plates.
Mm-hmm.
So while the two were both old companies and both well established, they did have different areas of production.
Mm-hmm.
But you talked about the railroads, and just historically, Dr. Lucan's, before he died in 1825, saw the need for making plates for boilers.
Mm.
Now, today people don't understand steam, but as steam was being developed and supplanted other forms of energy, you had to have a boiler to heat it to create the steam.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, he saw a market for that. So we have records as early as 1818, 1819, when he got started in that business, which, of course, Rebecca continued. And as the railroads grew and needed larger and larger steam plants, we made bigger and bigger plates for that application. Then the other thing you mentioned is ships. Well, here, Dr. Lucan's in 1825 provided iron plates for the hull, the boilers, for a boat called the Codorus, which was launched on the Codorus Creek in York County, and which has the distinction of being the first iron-hulled vessel built in America.
Hmm.
And we provided, and we have documentation, we provided iron for it.
Hmm.
So from an early time, Lucan's had involvement with the shipbuilding industry, which, of course, justified our exhibit, which Jim told you about, which has continued. We are still a major supplier, particularly for military vessels, carriers and nuclear submarines.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a long history of involvement with that particular industry, yes.
Very interesting comment on the wide range of applications. So looks like Lucan's and the Phoenix Ironworks didn't really directly compete in too many areas. They were kind of in separate areas, essentially, in terms of their focus.
Well, that's true. Phoenix Steel established a separate corporation, the Phoenix Bridge Company, using the iron which they produced, which focused on designing and engineering bridges. It became a great specialty. And if you go over to Phoenixville, you'll see one small example of their bridge work right there in front of the foundry building. So, yeah, that was that. But us was mostly plates. We were primarily a producer of plates and still are.
Yeah. Now, the plates go into motor vehicles as well?
Oh, you mean automobiles? I think that's usually lighter weight gauge than what we produce here.
How about tanks or military equipment?
Oh, yeah, tanks, military vessels, absolutely.
Hummers, Humvees?
Yes.
Other things like half tracks or other things that may have been used in World War One or Two.
Yes, I think we do. Sure. And during the Iraq War, when some of those Humvees were being blown up because they didn't have proper plate on the bottom, we produced plate for new designs that has made those safer for military personnel. Yes.
Excellent. In recent decades, steel has been experiencing what analysts call replacement or a substitution with alternative alloys or higher strength polymers in many applications. Could you talk a little bit about substitution?
Well, yeah, the industry has been affected by demands for other types of materials. One that bothers me is every time I see a concrete bridge going up instead of steel supports. But that's a very good example of how it has been replaced, and I would say definitely a factor in the decline of steel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, happily, we're still going strong here with heavy plate. And incidentally, historically, we still have the capacity to roll some of the widest and heaviest plates in the country. If you're a historian of this, you must know that there are many steel companies in America and plants, which are history now. They're gone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, obviously, steel, iron and steel industry, major industry in the United States, and it has experienced not only substitution, but certainly extreme competition from countries around the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, competition has been putting a lot of the industries out of business, not just steel. Mm-hmm. When you can make things out abroad and ship them here at a lower cost than we can make them here, yeah, it adds up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Now, the museum is at 50 South First Avenue in Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Coatesville is to the north-northwest of downtown Philadelphia. Talk a little bit about the museum. Is it appropriate for all ages, family-friendly?
Yes, I'll let Jim handle that. By all means. We are open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Tours run from 10 to 3. We do, depending on the interest of the visitor, take them through the historic homes, show them where Rebecca lived and our Victorian mansion, Terracina, which has many lovely antiques, lovely history items there. Greystone Mansion, which was the home of Rebecca's grandson, beautiful architecture there. And then here in the office building, some of the architecture and the exhibits inside. But we also have behind us a couple of large artifacts, a sonar sphere, which was a listening device inside of a submarine, and then one of the tridents, which was made here in Coatesville, which went to New York to be the structural support in the World Trade Centers. And so we have a wide variety. We have fire engines here, which were part of the Lukens Fire Department. There's, I guess it's 15 acres of the Green National Historic Landmark, which is the Lukens Historic District, and then the components that make up the current museum, and we're in the process of acquiring two of the mill buildings behind us. As I mentioned, the steel mill, the plant, is adjacent to us, and at some future date, we will be acquiring two of the plant buildings.
Excellent. Now, it sounds like a fascinating array of exhibits and displays. Can people actually go nearby and see steel being made or rolled or what have you?
No, the public tours ended with Lukens. They could get public tours up until around 1998. But when Bethlehem acquired Lukens, the public's tours ended. We do have videos that can show you the process, but you can't really feel the heat or hear the noise other than the fact that it is adjacent to us across the Brandywine, within 100 yards.
Okay, so we're very close by.
Yeah.
Now, this is for both of you, Jim and Gene. Tell us about your favorite exhibit or exhibits at the museum.
Well, I would say that my favorite exhibit is within the exhibit room, and you show the process, as you alluded to, of the 300 years of iron and steel making. showing the natural resources, showing the early water powered and now the electric powered furnaces, also the products that are made on the 206-inch rolling mill, and then some of the products to come out. The sonar sphere exhibit and the trains and ships, all within one room, the visitor can really, within a 15-minute tour, really get the idea of how steel was made here in Coatesville.
Excellent. How about you, Gene?
Well, I would say amen to all of what Jim is saying. We are trying to produce and provide the public with a history. Being both a railroad buff and being passionately interested in ships, I think they were my two special interests of our products here. And we have exhibited those things and tried to make it clear. And, of course, for many people, the railroads are passe. They don't understand the history. Mm. And now the transatlantic passenger ships are largely history. I mean, we are teaching the past, but we're trying to relocate this into the minds of the present so that they understand people, you know, just what it was.
Exactly. Do you have a speaker series or any special events coming up?
Yeah, we do. As a matter of fact, our next event is tomorrow night. We're on the Chester County Town Tours and Village Walks. That begins at 5:30, and that's a free tour of the historic district.
Oh, excellent.
But we do have a lecture series. We tie the lectures to the exhibits. So we've finished up the shipbuilding lectures in the spring. We have the large Rebecca Lukens Award ceremony each spring. Now we're having a summer exhibit tied to the upcoming exhibit, also the 300 years of iron and steel, which, again, we've spoken about earlier, 300 years of iron and steel making in Pennsylvania.
Excellent. And real quickly, we're about to end the show, but are there any interesting exhibits coming in the next few months or later in the year?
Yeah, we'll do the Hall of Fame of Iron Sights. That will round out this year. And then next year, we're going to have the exhibit of the America's Cup, because, again, steel went into ships which competed in the America's Cup. And then we'll do the 100th anniversary of the 206-inch rolling mill over in the plant. So
excellent.
Those are upcoming exhibits.
Excellent. Thank you so much. The website is steelmuseum.org. And the number for the National Iron and Steel Museum in Coatesville, PA, is 610-384-9282. Jim and Gene, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, July 13th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be speaking with Roger Stewart, who runs the historic and very popular Jimmy John's Hot Dogs on Route 202. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.